focus my presentation today on the air pollution coming from waste open dumps and incinerators as major sources of air pollution in the country. This work is done under the AUB Collaborative for the Study of Inhaled Atmospheric Aerosols, or CARS, and under the Department of Chemistry at the American University of Beirut. The CARS Center, or the AUB Collaborative for the Study of Inhaled and Atmospheric Aerosols, is a multidisciplinary center, and it works, and its main focus is on the emission of particles, how they are dispersed in the atmosphere, what are the chemical transformations, and what happens when we inhale them into the body, what are the major health effects, and whether or not we can change policy. And that's extremely important, and I will also talk about this. This center has been initiated by Professor Alan Shhadi, who is the interim dean of Faculty of Engineering and Architecture, and myself. Today, I will present data that has been collected by a team of professors at AUB, including Dr. Isam Rais, Professor Alan Shhadi, and Dr. Joseph Zaiter, all from the Faculty of Engineering. And the American University of Beirut has actually funded most of these projects in collaboration with the Lebanese National Council for Scientific Research. So the outline of my presentation will be global look at air pollution. What is air pollution in a very nutshell, small introduction? Air pollution in Lebanon as we know it or as we have measured it. And then the waste open dumps and incinerators as sources of pollution, and some conclusions and recommendations. I would like to start by emphasizing what WHO has released in 2016, that almost 2 million children under the age of 5 die every year from some sort of environmental problems. This is extremely alarming. Out of these 2 million, there are 570,000 children under the age of 5 who die from air pollution. Looking at every one of us, not only the children, it has been reported by WHO that 7 million people die every year from air pollution. Out of these, the major health problems that people encounter from air pollution is lung cancer. So all the lung, out of the 100% lung cancer people, there are 36% who die from air pollution, 35% COPD, 34% stroke, and 27% heart disease. How do we quantify air pollution? This is extremely important. And how do we relate it to death? This is one of the studies that have been cited more than 5,000 times, perhaps, where people, Dockery and his co-workers, they actually measured particulate matters in the air in six different cities, and that's why it's called the Harvard Six City Study. And they found a clear linear correlation between the concentration of particulate matter and the mortality rate, which is extremely important. So this is saying that every time you increase, every time you increase the concentration by 10%, you're increasing by 10 microgram per meter cube, you're increasing the mortality rate by 10%. Also, recent studies have shown that air pollution is related or linked to anxiety and depression, to childhood brain tumor, to psychiatric disorder, and very recently, that was last month, that some people or some scientists have identified dangerous bacteria, hard to kill, that have been growing due to air-polluted cities. How does this work? So basically, we have emission from different sources, like industrial waste, ashes, and fuel burning. These produce particles of different sizes, and here I'm referring to PM10, PM2.5. These particles get inhaled at different levels inside the respiratory system and into the brain. And if they reach down to the alveoli system, then they start causing more damages. What is air pollution in a very brief introduction? Any combustion source can emit air and particles into the air. We call these primary emission. These get diluted and transformed into the atmosphere, and they react with sunlight to form what we call secondary particles. Secondary particles, you all have seen it, is basically the haze that you see over Beirut every day when you go a little bit up to the mountains. So this is basically like a cooking pot that is cooking all these pollutants and forming this haze. The problem with that is that we have a nice weather. A nice weather means that it's sunshine. That means we have photochemical reaction. And it also means that pollutants do not go away. They cook from one day to the second. And that's what we mean by nice, good weather in Beirut. Because we don't have wind very often, so pollutants do not get dispersed and they accumulate. And that's why in the summer you would see this haze thicker and thicker as you go up. What WHO has reported, based on our measurements, is that the average particulate matter, the fine particulate matter in Lebanon, is 32 micrograms per meter cube, and this means it is 3.2 times higher than what WHO recommends. This is, you can find this on the website of WHO under Breathe Life campaign that they are launching this year. Even more disturbing is that when we did head-to-head comparison or gram-for-gram comparison between Beirut and Los Angeles, we found that the same particles, even if they weigh the same thing, they do not have the same toxins. We are at much higher toxicity even if we compare the same particulate matter. And this is extremely disturbing. We attributed this partially, not all of it, to diesel generators that are present everywhere around us. And we have demonstrated that 38% above what we normally see is usually due to diesel generators. Other sources of pollutions are basically the GE power plant, the Zoo power plant, the open waste dumps, and the open waste burning. For the GE power plant, we have measured the most toxic polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbon to be at least 10 times higher than what we measured next to it in Zoo Imkayil or in AUB. For the GE power plant, it's work in progress. We're still working on that. For the open waste burning, it's extremely dangerous because the amount of dioxins that we measured last year was 400 times more than any other place. For the open dumping, there is a study that was done by Dr. Monique Shaya at AUB where she reported that acute health symptoms are 400% greater when you are living next to an open dump or you're living away from it. And what she means by acute health symptoms are the gastrointestinal, respiratory, dermatological, and other symptoms. As if this is not enough. Now, what are they saying? They're talking about incinerators. And some of the municipalities have even brought incinerators and started using them. Well, I don't want to say we are against incinerators just for the sake of being against it. I want to see why it's useful in EU, why it has been used in EU, and it doesn't apply to our setting. So what I will spend the time to do in the next 5 minutes, or 15 minutes, is to show you why this technology is not suitable for our environment. This is the picture of an incinerator in Denmark. Well, They have decorated it, and it looks very nice, right? But what are the regulations that are put for on this incinerator for it to work properly? There is what we call an EU waste incineration directive, where the directive is there to limit any negative effect on the environment, be it soil, water, or air. What they require, and now I'm talking about the EU Commission, they require that before you even think about an incinerator, there is a phase called prior to construction or application and permit. The second phase before even thinking about an incinerator is public acceptance. And then the third is operation. And number four is what to do with the discharges into the soil, water, and air. So there are many requirements for the application, meaning you have to look at the total waste capacity of the plant, you have to look at the hazardous material, what are the measures that you're taking to do to recover from heat and to minimize the waste, and what are you going to do with the waste that is generated after you burn. So you anybody who wants to install an incinerator has to attend to all these requirements before they even think about it. Okay, total waste capacity means that you have to make sure that the burner is able to burn all the waste. The most important thing is that in this waste, you cannot burn hazardous material like oil, paint, batteries, and so on and so forth. Okay, there should be a reuse recycling system before you even think about an incinerator, be it what to do with the metal, paper, glass, plastic, and all the other components. And this has to be before they even think about a permit. And at the end, there is a whole procedure of what to do with the ashes, with the water that is generated there, and with the air. And I'm going to talk about these components one at a time. So the second criteria or the second requirement to have a permit to do an incineration is public acceptance, which means all these requirements and specifications have to be made available to the public. The public reviews it, and then they will decide whether or not they will need accept to have an incinerator next to them. So I'll start in the operation mode. Every truck who comes to do an operation has to have a checklist sheet where they indicate the type of waste and the capacity and all the specifications of the waste. Also, in the operation, there should be a very good plan of when to do startup, at what temperature we're going to boil, and what are the emission limit values. It's extremely important to know that no incinerator should be operating below 850 degrees, and if they do fail for a certain time, the emission is going to be catastrophic. So they should have at least two boilers adjacent to each other to avoid any catastrophe coming from a failure to one of the boilers. So the total organic carbon must be less than 3%, and this is extremely important because all our waste is 56% organic, if not more. Okay. I will not go into the type of waste that we have and what to do with it. I want to focus on the things I know best, that is how to tackle the pollution that is coming from the incinerators. Starting with the solid residues, they have to be well characterized, that means tested, and also disposed in a very good way. There is the water discharge, which is extremely important, because water is used for cooling, and sometimes a mist is mixed with the vapor that comes out of the boiler, and these water have to be tested for a lot of things like pH, temperature, all the heavy metals, dioxins, and furans, and this all costs money, expertise, and labs to do this. Now, talking about the air, this is a total another story altogether, because there should be filters to filter the particulate matters and the dioxins, and there should be a system that will measure continuously a lot of gases like NOx, CO, total organic carbon, HCl, which is hydrochloric acid, very dangerous, hydrochloric fluoride, which is extremely dangerous, SO2, O2, temperature, pressure, and water vapor. This should be at a continuous time, non-stop, not even 0 second. Also, it is recommended by EU that there should be periodic monitoring of heavy metals like mercury, cadmium, lead, and others, and there should be also periodic monitoring of dioxins and furans in the stack of the emission. That means after the filters have been put. Just to tell you that those measurements are not simple. They require highly sophisticated procedures and highly sophisticated equipment that none of the labs, as far as I know, is set up to do the dioxins and furans in Lebanon. Okay, so we're talking about dangerous gases like cadmium, thallium, mercury, and we're talking about dioxins and furans that are extremely dangerous. They go into the system. They cannot be eliminated by the men, but women can eliminate them by giving them to their children. So this is extremely bad. Okay, so this is very nice. Okay, EU directive has been putting all these limits, and still, we have found that a lot of people were annoyed by having the incinerators next to them despite all these requirements. And recently in July 2016, we saw that people in Durham, UK, were extremely annoyed by the non-controlled or non-meeting and not meeting the specifications of the emission inside the boilers and in the chimney. So people, despite all these requirements, are just not happy with having those incinerators next to them. Even in Paris, because we like to compare ourselves to Paris, they have reported many fire incidents and many dioxins and furans inside animals or inside the meat because people have been or animals have been contaminated from the grass that grows around these incinerators. Also, the EPA or the US EPA has put similar restrictive and harsh conditions, and still the press has reported several violations of these requirements or regulations. For example, in New York, there has been an incident. There has been a lawsuit against General Electric for $2.25 million, again, also for the same problem. And so what do we do in a case like Beirut? Even if we have those good regulations and life is so beautiful and we are very careful and we need the incinerators, where do we put them? That's the question. Let's assume that everything is going to go like planned. We did some simulations of assuming that we put the incinerators either in Hirsch, Beirut or Daura. We tried to see how much you know gases and particles they emit, and we simulated the dispersion of the particles, and as you can see here, these particles. So what we did, we calculated the amount of particles that comes out of the incinerators. We took in consideration the level, the vectors or the wind speed and direction, and we simulated those plumes. I'm sorry, it's not moving here. It should be moving. It is? You can see it. Okay, I can't see it here. So what's happening is all these vectors are taken in consideration the meteorological conditions, and what we're doing is actually trying to follow the plume in Hirsch, Beirut, and see how many people and how many areas will be affected by it. And the same thing goes for a location in Daura, where we did very similar exercise, and we looked at the plumes and everything. And on average, you can see that the plume will not save anybody. Okay, so it will be dispersed all over Beirut in the case of Hirsh Beirut, and in the case of Daura, it will cover all the way to Juni. Yes, there is a need for periodic monitoring. There is a need for continuous monitoring if we decided to go for incinerators, but there are many questions. Who will conduct the periodic and continuous monitoring? Do we have an independent, competent authority to do the work? How can the competent authority reinforce compliance? Let's say they found something wrong. Who will enforce what? What are the local standards? Do we have limit values for our waste incinerators in Beirut? What are the local specifications for such an exercise? Who makes sure that instruments are calibrated and are subject to control and annual surveillance? Who checks whether calibration to reference methods is done frequently? I mean, all these questions need to be answered before we go on with the plan, if they decided to go with the plan. The next thing I would like to highlight, that if we go back to the original graph that I showed, that you know, every increase of 10 microgram per meter cube will increase the death rate. So for now, the levels of particulate matters are between 25 and 30, which means we are at 30% above the limit for mortality rate. What will happen when we have all these incinerations installed in the country? This is a question that I would leave unanswered. And so I would like to say, at the end, that there are a lot of air pollution concerns in the country, and we have done several studies to prove that many sources are contributing to air pollution. Sources of toxins that come out from incinerators are even more dangerous, and we are actually calling for the presence of a body that will reinforce air pollution measurements if there is a need or there is no way out of incinerators. But how could we not have a way out if Europe, if we want to just look at Europe, now Europe is trying to take out most of the incinerators that they have and go for a zero waste initiative. Why can't we do this? And I would like to ask for your help. And like the American Lung Association, they proclaimed or they started the fight for healthy air. I am here taking the opportunity to invite you to help us fight for healthy air, to do and ask for Clean Air Act, and to document everything you see, because we really need concrete evidence to show that air pollution is actually affecting every one of us. And I thank you.
Thank you very much for this very nice updating, which is life for us, really. And it's the basis, it'll be the basis for many, many, many things and many actions eventually. And at the same time, I would like to to ask you a question. Do you think it'll be useful to constitute a committee through the Lebanese society and to reinforce the lobbying for a disaster like this one? This will be possibly, you are aware about what could be done in this field, and I think the society will be interested to proceed, you know, to go ahead with something efficient.
I think it's time for all of us to move in one direction or the other. We cannot stay still and we cannot stay quiet. I think this is a danger that's coming into everyone's home. It's no way out. We either have to say that, no, we don't want this to happen, or we're just going to accept to be killed slowly. I mean, this is my view on this. And yes, to answer your question, it's time to move, not only on one front, not only with one committee, We have to move on several committees.